Good evening, friends. I'm Trevor, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. We're starting this meeting a little bit early. Everybody's waiting around, just waiting for the meeting to start, and there's sufficient of us to keep it going for the extra time anyhow. So why not? And it's good to see you all here this evening. I'll just read out the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And as I said before, I'm Trevor and I'm an alcoholic, and the only requirement for me to be chairman of this particular meeting is the fact that I am an alcoholic. And my alcoholism stemmed over a period of 16 years. And right from the day that I took my first drink through till some time after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I ceased to grow in all of the areas that would have made it possible for me to live comfortably with my family, with my wife and four children, and with my fellow man. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous after 16 years of drinking, I was in a state of total despair. I'd looked around everywhere and was unable to find the answer. And it's amazing how we do come to this fellowship, because it was on Australia Day in 1977 that I was standing in the pub, and I totally resigned myself to the fact that I was going to be a daily drunk for the rest of my life, because that was my lot. I couldn't go a day without a drink, and if I had one, I couldn't stop, and was swept out with the bumpers every night, and I had a blackout nearly every day that I drank. And I was standing in the bar of this hotel, the Royal at Randwick, on this particular Monday night, and a fellow came in that was a good drinking mate of mine, and I hadn't seen him for a short time. And I simply said to him, I said, where in the heck have you been? And he said, I've been on the grog. And I said, how in the heck have you managed to do that? And because he'd been away for about 3 months, and he said, I've been to AA. Well, I arranged with that fellow then to take me to a meeting the following night, and I haven't had a drink to this night, and that's 5 years and 3 months ago. And the only thing that I've done right in all that time is the fact that I keep coming back to the meetings. And really and truly, that is the reason why I'm here today. In that first 5 months, it was a settling period. I believe most of us go through some sort of settling period, whereby we actually get back to a state of some sort of, I wouldn't say sanity, but of some sort of recognition, whereby we're in a position to be able to see ourselves as we truly are. And that was my situation. And 5.5 months after I'd come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was reduced to nothing. I thought that AA was the big be-all and end-all, and it was the cure-all for all my ills. Communication was my greatest problem when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't talk with my wife and with my children, couldn't carry on a conversation at all. And 2.5 months after I'd come to Alcoholics Anonymous, when everything was supposed to be coming right and rosy and all this sort of thing, they got up and left. They couldn't stand me any longer, and I couldn't blame them. And probably a good thing, because when the wife left me, she took the cat and the dog, cat and the kids and the cutlery and all that sort of thing, and left me with a bed and the dog and a knife, fork and plate. And I went into a depression, and this depression was to last about 2 weeks, and it was getting blacker and blacker, and on this particular day in July, the only positive thought that I had in my mind was the fact that I was going to commit suicide. And I was laying there with the bed, the old dog up beside me for a bit of company, and pretty grim sort of a scene. And the thought occurred to me to ask for help, and I simply said, God help me. And within 10 minutes, the telephone rang. And somebody rang me on the telephone that day that had never ever rung me before in their life, but it was able to give me the assistance that enabled me to be here today. That was the turning point. They read out in chapter 5, we stood at the turning point. That was my turning point. My attitudes, my life, everything revolved around that particular point of time. Up until that moment, even in the 5.5 months that I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I measured everything in terms of, how far was it? It was 3 schooners and a middie. How much was it? It was 2 schooners and something or other. Measurement, everything, my thinking was all orientated around grog. During my drinking, I never drank with people who didn't drink. I never went anywhere with people who didn't drink. And, if I went to a dry party, that was for about 5 minutes and then I was off. I had other places to go to. And so my thinking was orientated that way. From that time of my turning point, I felt a fantastic release from this bondage of self that I had. And from that moment onwards, I had an open mind. I was able to change my attitudes to such an extent that it enabled me to see the things I couldn't before. When I came to AA, the fellow who brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous showed me where there was 2 meetings. I was of the opinion, for some reason or other, that I had to be shown where the rest were so that I could go to them. And nobody ever did that. So I went to 2 meetings a week. And that's how unwell I was. I just didn't have the ability to be able to pick up the literature and find out there's about 200 or 300 meetings in Sydney that I could openly go to, you see. But after this point of time, I certainly knew where they were. I found out where they were that day, and I went on a daily basis then for some considerable time. And as time went on, I found it necessary for me to go through the various plateaus that I was going through to change my group, to get involved in big book study groups, to get involved in where the action was, the steps, traditions, the everything that was available, the beginners groups, the whole lot. And as time's gone on, I think I've attained a little bit of sobriety. I'm not so concerned with all those things today as I am with my primary purpose. My primary purpose, as I understand it today, is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And to that, I'll do anything to the bitter end. And, up until a few weeks ago, I used to say to everybody who'd come my way, ring me at any time. But underneath, I would say, for God's sake, don't ring at 3 o'clock in the morning. But something happened in my life where that was totally removed. A beautiful incident, and I'll relate this, and then I'll allow other speakers to speak, otherwise I'll be here all night. We come in contact with some funny things in our life, and this one I still haven't got over, and I probably will retain some part of it for the rest of my life. My place is such now that the wife and family are back. I've got 4 kids, and they've all got 4 mates, and it's nothing to go home. There's 16 people there for dinner, all this sort of caper, you don't know who they are or what they are and all this sort of thing. But that's the way it is, and we love it, and we hope that they love us. And one of the little fellows that was coming around our way was a bloke by the name of Malcolm, and he even said to me one day, he said, I think I'll come around to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with you. I said, you beauty, And he says, I'll just go home and get dressed and come. And he got home and he phoned up and he says, I think I'll leave it until another day. And I said, well, the meetings are there. I go every day virtually, any time, come along. Malcolm got into trouble with drink. He was picked up by the police, kicking over garbage cans down the main street. Drink is no longer, being drunk without being offensive is no longer an offence for being picked up. He was. He went to the police station and something happened whereby he found it, the story comes back, he hung himself at 5 o'clock in the morning after having been picked up. If he hadn't had that first drink, he wouldn't have been kicking over the garbage cans. That made me feel the feeling of bereavement. And, the sense of loss and the sense came through to me that I hadn't done enough. I just hadn't done enough. And I wore that very heavily. And I was at a group meeting, and one of the meetings we run is a discussion meeting, and one of the people had a loss on the weekend. Their brother had died, and through various circumstances she opened up with this in the discussion meeting and told us how there was resentments involved and all this sort of thing. But that wasn't the important thing. The important thing was what happened. There were people at that meeting who explained to us very lovingly, very gently, what bereavement, death, and all these sorts of things were about. And one gentleman turned around, one of the members turned around and said, bereavement is usually associated in nearly every case with a sense of guilt. And it could be the guilt for not having done something, or the guilt for not having done something, but also for having done something. You know, it's pretty hard to escape it if you're close enough to the person. And once that understanding came through, something happened to me. I now know that it doesn't matter if it's 3:30 in the morning, I'm on my way to that call. And I only hope I'm given the opportunity now. It's giving me that extra little bit of willingness that will enable me to carry out my primary purpose. That is enough for me. David, would you like to start off, please?
Good evening, friends. My name is Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. It's nice to be reminded that I have so many sisters and brothers in this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's nice to be reminded that I can still laugh. And it's even nicer to be reminded that I can still shed tears, as I did last night in hearing of Edna passing away. No, I don't know just what I'm going to say to you, but I know that the power of God, as I understand him, will put the words in my mouth. I had the privilege in 1957 to serve as an usher at the public meeting in Sydney Town Hall. And I was fortunate enough to be related to a bloke that I heard say these words, and they apply very much tonight as they did then. He said, if you take nothing else from this meeting tonight, take hope that there is a way of arresting the disease of alcoholism one day at a time. In October last year, I attended a manager's meeting in the Westfield Centre at Parramatta. And there are about 80 managers from all over in different fields. And the guest speaker on that night was Walter Dickman. And Walter Dickman was the first man to bring the Dale Carnegie courses here to Australia. And then he branched out and he started a course of his own. And he came out, and I'd just like to repeat just what he did and said. He came out and introduced himself. And he said, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, he said, I want you to carry out an exercise with me. Will you do this? And they all said, yes. He said, it's quite simple, nothing to be alarmed about. He said, I want you to do an exercise quite simply. He said, I am going to clap my hands and count to four. And when I count to four, I want you to clap your hands. Will you do that for me? And they all said, yes, sure. And he turned his back. And he came forward in this manner. 1, 2, 3, and he clapped his hands, and everyone clapped with him. And he said, is there anyone here that didn't clap their hands? And two mugs put their hand up, one bloke over there and me over here, you know. And he said, the fella over there, he said, why didn't you clap? And he was a young bloke, and he said, I was too slow. And he said, what about you? And I said, I'm an old age pensioner, I'm slow, but I said, I'm still waiting for you to say four. And these are the most important things that I think I need to do and need to be aware today that they are here for me. Hope, which I've proved over a number of years, will work if I want it to work. And to be able to listen, to be able to listen. And it took me a long time to listen. Because I was around AA in Sydney for 9 years. And I was selling life assurance, and a ticklish problem came up in Grafton, and they said, Dave, we want you to go up there. You'll only be there for 3 months. All we need to know is you're going to take your family with you, or you're going on your own. And I said, I can't tell you. I'll have to talk it over with my wife. And we just had the second young fella. And she said, no, she said, I'd prefer to stick it out here where I have everything that I need. So they go up there and peddle my papers in rented quarters. So off Dave went to Grafton. And it was a ticklish situation that involved him from Chatsworth Island to Port Macquarie. You know, nothing to do, anything like 1,800 mile a week. And I was unfortunate, I could not get to a meeting in the towns on the night that they met. I was making contact with people like Joe and our committee chairman, Tom Kay, who was at Port Macquarie at the time. And after 3 or 4 weeks of this, I started getting edgy. I started to feel within myself that I was ill at ease. And I realized that I needed a meeting. And I referred to the reviver. I picked up the reviver and I had a look in the back, and in the back it's got Rita, a contact. And I was so far gone that Rita, being a Sheila, she wouldn't be able to help me. And I looked up Lismore, and Lismore's 80 mile one way and 80 mile the other. Excuse me, I'm getting a cold. And I look at Lismore, and Lismore's got Viv and Babe. Won't ring Babe. Babe, another Sheila, she wouldn't be able to help. I ring Viv. And I says, is the meeting on up there tonight? And he says, yes. And I says, are you having any rain? He said, no, nothing you can speak of. So I headed from Grafton out through Whipperee. And at Whipperee, water's coming in the Valiant car that I was driving. You know, he hadn't had any rain. I get there and his little Morris Minor, I learned was his later, was floating down the gutter, you know. And after the meeting was over, I was telling Viv just how I was feeling and what I was thinking. And he said, if you can spare 10 minutes, I said, I can spare 10 minutes for sure. He said, I'll take you around. He said, yes, you're the Babe. Around we go, and we go to this back door, and he knocks, and he says, is it all right to come in? A big gruff voice says, yeah, come on in. We walk in, his Babe, 6'5", and that broad. And ever since that night, I commenced to listen with an open mind. Now, at most meetings we attend in AA, we are asked to do simple things. And the moment I neglect to do these, I'm in trouble. The simple things we are asked to do is come to a meeting, sit down, be prepared to listen, and look for the similarities, not the differences. Don't reject anything you hear, because you may come to believe it to be true. You may come to believe it to be true. And I attended my first meeting in August 1946. And this was what I was asked to do. Just that. And I started to. I met Fred and his wife. There were only 4 people there. And Manly's one of the oldest. It is the oldest meeting in the Sydney metropolitan area. And Fred was a chemist in Manly. And I started to relax, sit down. And as you know, the 16th word in the 3rd step is God. And I have a brother doing the ministry. And he'd say, Dave, God will help you if you ask him. And I'd haul off and job him. Now, if you're here tonight looking for differences, don't go past the 1st step. Don't go past the first section of the 1st step. Because there's a difference. And I tried to live with it for 9 years. There's a difference between admitting to Dave that he's an alcoholic, that he has a problem, and completely accepting it. And I had my first drink I wonder how many of us can remember our first drink. I wonder how many can remember the feeling. What's it doing for me? I can. I was a mummy's boy stuck out in Barra Creek. And homesickness, and I'm going to bed with a blanket on like this. And the bloke said, the bottles are on over there tonight. Dave, come across, he said, and have a drink. He said, you won't have to cry yourself to sleep. I went across. I had half a bottle. I didn't even make the tent. I slept on the mica. And the progression of this disease, it's deadly too. You know, I bought a farm. And I know I bought the farm because it shared the pub fence. I paid for a room 12 months in advance because I knew that some nights I wasn't going to be able to make it. And it was only a quarter of a mile up the road. And I know what it is to be embarrassed by the disease of alcoholism, because the main road to Griffith used to go past a 240-acre paddock, and I put a crop in. But I'd spent the day at the pub and took three bottles of white heather whiskey onto the tractor with me. And I did the whole of the blooming paddock, put everything away. 8 days later, I go down and say, wonder why I only got two rows to strike. And I go back up, and the seed wheat's there, the soup is there. And you know, in a small country town, if you don't know what embarrassment's like, not one car at a time would pull up on that main road, but 20 of them. And they'd all lean there and talk to one another. Look at Dave's crop. Did you see Dave's crop? These are the feelings. And I was forced, you know, I used to say if I had plenty of money, I wouldn't drink in this fashion. And I was earning plenty of money. I had the farm, and the accountant used to say, gee whiz, mate, you're earning big dough, the equivalent of $30,000 a year in 1950. I used to say, if I was married, I wouldn't drink in this fashion. I'd pull my horns in, I wouldn't have to go down the road. I got married, you know, a small country town, and two lovely looking school teachers arrive. And the farmers come out of the woodwork. But David made up his mind he was going to marry that girl 6 months before he even met her. That's the type of alcoholic I was. I was racing well ahead, I can tell you. And I used to say if I was married, I wouldn't drink in this fashion. And I married this girl. And we came back to Sydney, and I didn't drink for 6 months. But oh, hell did I want to. Oh, gee. And after the 6 months, I thought, well, you know, a couple won't hurt me. And I started. And in a short space of time, mentally blacked out one night, I attempted to cut my wife's throat with a carving knife. Fortunately for me, a fella came into the little flatette, which was a partitioned off two-room veranda, back veranda on a house in Haberfield. He prevented it from happening. And when I got to work, leery-eyed and shaken the next morning, he said, do you know what you got up to last night? I said, no, not really. I said, the last thing I can remember, I said, was when we went to that wake for the fella at the officer's mess, and that officer came up the stairs and I king hit him. He said, yeah. He said, I wondered why you did that. He said, oh, he was an officer with me in the army. I couldn't stand him. That was the last I remember. He said, well, I'll take you a little bit further than that. He said, if I hadn't have been come in with you, he said, you wouldn't be here. You'd be in jail. You'd be up for murder. He said, you attempted to cut your wife's throat. And I laughed at him. He said, well, if you don't believe me, ask your wife. And my wife said, when I asked her, she said, it's not a very nice thing to tell you, but it's true. And she asked me what I was going to do about it. And I said, I'll go and have a yarn with Oz. And Oz has never ever told me that I was an alcoholic. He suggested to my mother that I may have a problem, and if she could get me along to a meeting, I may be able to help. That was how I came to get to the August meeting in 1946, to get my mum off my back. I went into Oz's place. He was living at Burwood. Pardon me. And he said, sit down, mate, have a cup of tea. He said, and we'll go to a meeting where you'll meet men and women who have the same problem as you and I. He said, I've been waiting a while for you to come. My immediate reaction and answer, I've been to one. He said, well, come to another one. He said, and you'll hear people talk about God. He said, and you'll hear people talk about faith. And he said, all I'm going to say to you, Dave, is this. He said, there's good and bad in you. He said, and the good far outweighs the bad. And he says, faith, in its simplest form to me, is believing. And I went to that meeting. And I know I got something out of it, and that something was keep coming to meetings. Because they told me if I stuck around, and if I didn't get AA and I stuck around, AA would get me. And if you don't believe it, I'm standing here sober tonight. Because that's exactly what happened. I went to a meeting, drunk every night for 3 weeks. And Ted M., who was Secretary of Ashfield at the time and later Secretary of our Central Service Office in Sydney, was at the meeting I attended on a January weekend of 1955. And he said, Dave, you're having a battle of yourself, aren't you? I said, yes, Ted, I am. He said, have you read this pamphlet? And he held it up. Who, me? And I said, yes, I have. He said, I suggest you read it again. And I only know one verse off pat, and that's all I need to know. When I get what I want, and I struggle of self with self, and the world makes me king for a day, go to the mirror and have a look at yourself and see what that man has to say. That night, the miracle happened for Dave, because I left that meeting that night and have not needed to drink since. Maybe I wanted to on occasions, but I have not needed to drink. And I have done the simple things that have been asked of me. You know, if we look at that first step, it's in two parts. And it's in two parts for a reason, because we're changing the context. We're changing the context of its meaning. The unmanageability of my life was the reason for my first drink. And the first step for me is a commitment. It's a conscious commitment of conviction. Surrender, acceptance, and convinced. The third step is one of daily commitment to a God that I have limited understanding of. But a God that I love, a God that I trust, and a God that I know that knows me. And I cannot go through the confession stage of the program and arrive at the 11th step and improve or try to improve my conscious contact with a God as I understand him unless I've committed my life to him that day. You know, this is a daily program for me. I'm capable of living with myself. I'm capable of living with other people. I'm capable of love. I'm capable of being loved. And all the excuses for drinking, Dave finds in three things. Resentment of people and situations. Self-pity, poor old little Dave, you know. And getting anxious about tomorrow. And these people, God love them, they showed me a way that I can live one day at a time without one drink. And for that, and the God that I understand in this fellowship, I'll be eternally grateful for the rest of my life. Thank you.
Sylvia.
Hello, I'm Sylvia and I'm an alcoholic. And I belong to the Port Macquarie group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, I was sitting there just thinking, and today has been a very lovely day. And here this afternoon, we were talking about the conferences and, you know, spacing them out. And oh, please God that they don't alter the our national convention, because we renew so many beautiful acquaintances, people we've known, people that we haven't met yet, and we come to meet them, and it just leaves a beautiful feeling. As a matter of fact, things that have happened over the last couple of days, I've really had a high. And I've had quite a few 24 hours of sobriety. But I'm sober today, as Dave made the reference of today. Yes, I'm sober today. Today, I can read the steps. I can concentrate on them. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't do that. I had lost lack of concentration, decency, love, full of resentments, hate, jealousy, and jealous of my sister. But most of all, I hated myself. I don't believe I was born to finish up the type of woman I did finish. I didn't come from an alcoholic family. I didn't come from a broken home. But I am an alcoholic. I've tried many times since I've been sober to look at my family, and nowhere along the line can I trace any alcoholism. But I accept myself for what I am. I'm not the bad person I thought I was. I'm a sick person wanting to recover. And again, it comes back to that fact, one day at a time. My alcoholism is improving a little bit each day. And I can face the day. And this morning I said to my husband when he woke up, I'd been lying there for about an hour, from 5 o'clock till just after six. And I was reminiscing on things that have happened this particular day and yesterday. And the joy it gave me. And I was meditating in my own personal communication with God. And I have no hesitation in saying God today. And I had been brought up in a good family as a child, taken to church and Sunday school, belonged to everything in the church. But alcoholism deprived me of all this. And then I got to the stage when my brother was killed. I couldn't understand God taking a little baby. And then when my husband died, that was the absolute climax. There couldn't be a God, because why could God do this to good people? And so my alcoholism improved dramatically. I really went down the lane, down the gutter. And I finished in the gutter too. I was picked up out of the gutter in my drinking days. And I finished in all sorts of dives. In streets in the city of Sydney today, I wouldn't even walk down the middle of the day. But I had no fear of those things those days because of my desperate need for alcohol. And those among us that drank in the war years know how hard it was to get grog. And so I would go to any length to get grog. I've done all sorts of things. But I finished up by the time AA found me, I was a complete derelict in every facet of the word. And when I got to my first or my third meeting at North Sydney, my first two meetings I don't remember much about, because I still drank in between those meetings. But the third meeting at North Sydney on the Monday night, I literally ran because I wanted what these people had. And at that particular time, I had nothing and nobody to get sober for. Absolutely nothing. Anything I'd had of value had been sold or pawned or lost. And so at that third meeting, where I heard it said, I could leave that meeting and I need never drink again. Up till today, that's just how it's happened. These people that told me that, there were only a very few people at that meeting, but those people talked to me after the meeting, and they said there'll be times that you might want a drink, but you won't need a drink. Make sure you have phone numbers. Well, I might add, I was living in a dirty little room in North Sydney, and I didn't even have the price of a phone call half the time, let alone have a phone. And they said, well, if you can get to a phone, get to a meeting. And this is what I did. And there were times I had to walk from North Sydney across the Harbour Bridge to the Old End meeting. And I did it because I was desperate. I wanted again what these people had to offer. They told me again, I repeat, that I could leave that meeting and need never drink again. And that's today, it's just how it's been. But there were times that I wanted a drink. There were times I thought about a drink. But I didn't pick it up. And in my years of sobriety, I suppose, looking back at my drinking period, I've had so many problems and so many things happen that I would have rushed to the bottle. But I never did. I rushed to my sponsor. Unfortunately, he's not with us today, but he was a fantastic help to me, and I could pour my heart out to him. Or I'd get to a meeting, or I'd phone somebody, but I never picked up that fatal drink, because I don't ever want to go back to the hell that I came out of. And this is what it would do to me. I not only drank, right from the beginning, alcohol gave me a headache. I wasn't sane enough or mature enough to know that if I don't pick a drink up, I wouldn't have become addicted to drugs. I lived for a period of time in New Guinea. I tried desperately there to take my life. I overdosed on more than one occasion. And it's only by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous that I am alive today. I often joke about it, but I'm dead serious. But I've often said, oh, you know, he never had any room upstairs for me. So he still wanted me down here. He wanted to make me suffer a bit more. But I don't suffer today. I don't suffer like I used to. I've had a lot of pain, yes, physical pain. But that doesn't worry me. That makes me know I'm alive. And the answer is here. Nowhere else. Among the people that have the same disease that I have. And at our meetings years ago, you don't hear it said a great deal now, but it used to be quoted, if we're a diabetic, we would have to have insulin for the remainder of our lives. Being an alcoholic, I have to have the type of treatment that helps the alcoholic. And the only type of treatment that there is any sort of relief at all in is associating with other members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I've made a comment, as a matter of fact, one of my women I sponsored made a comment today, and she said, I can remember you saying a few years ago, if you only help one person, you can die happy. And this last 2 days, three people, three women, I've renewed a beautiful friendship with, that just because I was sober, a message was given to me, a seed was planted in me, and from that seed, I've been able to make transplants. Whether these transplants eventually die, I don't know. I'm not God. I don't intend to play God. But I just put the transplants there, and it's up to them. But it does give one joy to see them still sober. And for me, it has been a fantastic convention. And I'm grateful to each and every one here. I've got a lot of old friends, and I've got a lot of new friends. Because it doesn't matter where we go, if we have the disease of alcoholism, strangely enough, we're all accepted. And yet, basically, I'm still the same person I was. The only difference is I'm not drinking. I'm clean. I don't have mental blackouts. But for what it's worth, since I've been sober, I've had quite a few very bad nightmares. Really bad ones. But they don't upset me today. But apart from that, I'm sober, I'm clean, not only in body, but in mind also. And today, I love today. There's love in my heart that I never knew about. Alcoholics Anonymous didn't give me back all the family I lost. Out of 3 children, I have 1 daughter. And out of 5 grandchildren, I only have 1 grandchild. God love her, she's 21 this year, and she's going for a world cruise shortly, or by plane. And she knows I'm an alcoholic, but thank God she's never seen me drunk. And I can talk to her, and say for this one grandchild, out of 5, I'm very, very grateful. But most of all, I'm grateful that I'm sober. I'm grateful for the love that's given to me. I can share love with my husband today. And it's not shared with a bottle but like I did with my first husband. And I loved him very dearly. But the grog had to come first. And that man never once told me I was an alcoholic. But many, many, many times he used to be heartbroken. He'd say, "Oh, Sylvia, I don't know why you drink, because you can't drink." And he knew nothing about alcoholism. He knew nothing about the disease. And so God took him. And he took him that I might get sober. It was a pretty hard thing to battle with for 6 years, till I got to AA. But I am sober today. I've made my peace with the God that understands me. I don't profess to understand God. But the God that understands me, that always understood me. And again, I believe it was the prayers of my late husband, of my mother-in-law, and my mother, that Alcoholics Anonymous eventually found me. And I'm grateful to the fact that God spared my mother just long enough for me to get sober, and only sober a few days, but to be able to go and make my amends to her. And for this I'm grateful. But most of all, I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and God and to each and every one here. And I hope you all have as lovely a time as I've had. Thank you.
Bill.
Billy.
Hi, friends. I'm Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. And hi, I'm from Queensland. I belong to a Woodbridge group in Brisbane currently, and it's nice to be here. I feel a little bit nervous. I came here tonight, I got a ticket in my pocket to go to a dance, you know, and I thought I couldn't think of a nicer place to be on a Saturday night but at a meeting. And I might get to a dance later, but I'll get my thoughts together in a minute. I had 17 years of drinking. I'm not going to go into a drinker log or anything. I started at 13 on the banks of the Bogan River in New South Wales. A couple of fellas had a bottle of Plonk there, and they asked me what I like a drink, and it was the only social drink I ever remember having. And it made me feel the way I thought I wanted to feel, and it helped me to be the person I thought I wanted to be. And At 20, I'd been drinking with a school of fellows in North Queensland for a long time, and they all died, but one, and he's in charge of Stowers, and I'm here. And they bought my sobriety for me over a long period of time. I approached Alcoholics Anonymous at 20. I'll be 39 this year. I've worked talking about it this afternoon. I've spent nearly half my life around Alcoholics Anonymous. I hasn't always been in Alcoholics Anonymous, so unfortunately. And I came to AA, I was coming off a bender, and I was sitting in a pub in Brisbane on my own, and I saw a young man, a young woman about my age walk past this hotel, and they were hand in hand, and they were laughing and enjoying life. And I wondered why I couldn't live the way they were living. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous on my own, and the lady at the central office in Brisbane, her name was Phyllis, then it was a long time ago, and she gave me a Who Me, and she said, take this and read it, and if you think you have a problem, there's a meeting in the next room tonight. And I went back to the pub, and I read this Who Me, and it had this little questionnaire in there, you know, and I thought I was a pretty smart guy in those days, and I loved questionnaires, you know, anything to prove I was smarter than anybody else. And I was here, you know, I had 15 positive answers for 20 questions, and I got the other 5 up later. But, so anyway, I went to the meeting that night, you know, it was in Venus Chambers in Wickham Street in the Valley in Brisbane, and I went into this meeting, and there were about 15 people there, and they were happy, and as soon as I walked in the door, I could feel the affinity with these people, you know, I could physically feel something. And I spoke with them, and I felt that they understood the way I felt and the way I thought. Prior to this, I thought I was the only fellow walking around on this planet like me. And they told me that night that I could leave the room that night and I need never drink again, you know, and I was horrified. But it applies to me as much tonight as it ever has. You know, I can leave here tonight and I need never drink again if I so desire. And I know this for a fact. And I had a look at the program. They told me I had a threefold disease, which was spiritual and mental and physical. And I was also a pretty emotional sort of a fellow too, you know. And I could understand the physical suffering of an alcoholic and the physical craving and that. I didn't believe that I had any mental deficiencies. I couldn't understand that at all because the way I was at that time, I'd been that way all my life. I'd never lived any other type of a life than what I was living at that time when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I didn't understand that I was different, although I should be living and thinking differently to what I was. So I didn't think that I had anything mentally wrong with me, and spiritually I was totally bankrupt. I realize now, you know, I was verging on atheism. I went to a Catholic school like many of us did when I was a little boy, and I had the nuns, one nun would be telling me about how Jesus loved me very much, and then I'd go into the next classroom and a nun there would be telling me if I didn't toe the line like I was going for the big cook, you know, and typical alcoholic fashion, you know, I resigned from something I didn't understand when I was 8 years of age, you know, and through my teen years, you know, I had been in a lot of trouble, and I'd asked this God for help, but he didn't come across with his side of the bargain, you know. And so I said, well, there mustn't be any God. I've been known to stand in front of Catholic churches and abuse God for the impertinence of putting me on this earth many times, you know. And anyway, I came to the meetings and I loved the people in AA and the fellowship, but I didn't want to do these steps, you know. I said, all right, I'm an alcoholic. I admitted I was an alcoholic, but I couldn't accept it. And that's as far as I ever looked at the program. And I stayed sober for about 6 weeks and then I went back to the bush and I remember a little friend, many of us know him here, Sport sent me my first big book when I was in the bush and I read it there but I still couldn't accept that I had to stop drinking. But I kept coming back to AA, you know, and over a period of 10 years I came to AA and I went away and I still wondered what these people had and I started to do most of the yes that I heard about around AA, and life got pretty dreadful. The last 3 years of my drinking was nothing but hell. I became a very mad person in the community. I believed then, and I still believe now, that the last 3 years of my drinking, I should have been put away for the benefit of the community. I was a dangerous man walking the streets. I remember trying homicide 11 times, and fortunately I failed. But at the same time, you know, I used to be able to justify in my own mind that I was doing the right thing. People wouldn't leave me. I just wanted to be left alone, and they wouldn't leave me alone. They tried to take away from me the rights to live the way I believe I wanted to live. And finally, how I stopped drinking, I got married towards the end of my drinking. I don't know why I got married, but I did. You know, we make some of these mistakes, some of us. And I was married 4 months, you know, and my bride of 4 months came to me one morning. I don't know where she used to sleep, but she wouldn't stay in the same house as me. She came home one morning and she had this piece of paper and it had been signed by a couple of doctors, you know. And she said, "You're totally insane and you have to be put away." And she said, "I'm going to have you committed to Woolston Park." And I said, "Now wait a minute, you know, like we'll have to look at this sort of thing, you know." And I said, she didn't know that I'd ever been there, Alcoholics Anonymous. She didn't know that I knew there was an answer, you know. And I said, "Well, I'll go over up the hospital and see if I can get off it, you know." And I went up this PAB 4 and they wouldn't have me at PAB 4 in Brisbane. So then they referred me to Lowson House and Lowson House, they didn't want me either, you know. They said, "You can go into Wakehall if you like. We've got a beautiful program for people like you up in Wakehall." And I said, "That'll be great. Anywhere." I wanted to get away from my wife, you know, and I wanted to beat this committal or whatever, because I knew that if I'd been committed, they would have certified me. And I knew that they'd fill me up with drugs, and I knew that I'd probably never ever get out of the place. And so I went into Wakehall, and in Wakehall, they put me in the slammer there, you know, one of those little rooms with the window in the door, and I was in there for 5 days. And when I came out of there, all I remember of it now was there was this fella singing On the Wings of a Snow White Dove for background music, you know. If I ever get him, I'll kill him. But anyway, and then I came out of there and I said to the fella, I said, "What did you just give me?" And he said, "Well, we didn't give you very much at all. He's some Dilantin and that for, so he wouldn't take any more seizures." And I said, "How long have I been in here?" And he said, "5 days, you know. And how I'm alive, I don't know." But it was the first miracle in my life. You know, here I was free from alcohol. I was alive. I didn't believe it was possible to live without alcohol, and I was free of it. And I wandered around in that place for about 3 weeks, in a bit of a daze. And I remembered a lovely old lady who had been an Alcoholics Anonymous years before when I first came in Brisbane, and her name was Josie. And Josie did the first step in this same place. And Josie used to say at meetings that all you're asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is to try. And I thought, "Well, I'll go out of here and I'll go back to AA. There isn't anywhere else left. And I'll try just one more time." And I wanted to be sober. And the only reason I wanted to be sober because I didn't want to go around hurting anybody anymore. I didn't want to see those tears in my wife's eyes anymore, you know. Or anyone else's eyes for that day, you know. And I thought, "Well, that's all I get out of life, just to be sober and not hurt anybody else, so that'll be enough." And I came out of there and I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a look at the steps again, you know, and I accepted that I was an alcoholic. And I didn't do any more about it. I had a look through the program, you know, and I got to step 3 and I said, "Well, one day, if I ever find some sort of a higher power that I can understand, I'll hand my life over to it." And that was the decision I made, and I left it right there. And I went to a lot of meetings in 5.5 years, and I sat in the back row with a closed mind, and I was unwilling to listen to anybody. I was unwilling to learn anything. I would not communicate with people. I didn't want a sponsor. I didn't believe I needed one, and I got worse. Alcoholism is progressive if we don't do anything about ourselves. You know, it was in me, and I tried to manage my own life for 5.5 years. The only thing I didn't do was pick up a drink. If you ask me today how I stayed sober, I've got to say I don't know, because I don't know. But in that 5.5 years, a lot of things happened to me, you know. The wife went and the house went and the car went and everything else went materially. I had no friends. I started on geographicals all over Queensland just to try and retain my sanity. And I finally finished in a little town called Gladstone. And if anybody here hasn't been to Gladstone, don't go. It's really bad news there, you know. If you want to go into a depression, just drive into Gladstone. You know. But however, I was living there in this little flat, and I was, you know, I was at the end of my road mentally, and about this time somebody came along and he gave me a tape, and it was a tape of an American gentleman who came out here in 1978. His name was Wesley Parrish. And he said, you listen to this tape of this American bloke. He's got some good news here. And I didn't like Americans, you know. And I reckon they're all full of wind. And anyway, I said, well, give us the, I'll take it home. And I only took it home to keep this fella happy. That's all. We'll shut him up, see. And one night I put this tape on by mistake. You know. And this fellow, he was talking about Bill Wilson on the tape at the particular part I put on, and how when Bill Wilson was in hospital, and Ebby came to see him, and Ebby told him to pray as an experiment, and he said, if there's a God up there, show yourself to me, and it worked for Bill Wilson, you know. And a few days after this, it must have stuck in my head, because a few days after this, I was sitting at the table in that same flat with a rifle, and a big book, and a bottle of methylated spirits, and the power of choice. And I was going to shoot myself, and I was fair dinkum, and I thought about this shooting myself, and I remember a mess that I cleaned up in Sydney in Victoria Street some years before, where an alkie had done the wrong thing, and I hadn't forgotten the smell of the blood, and I thought, I don't want to leave a mess like this for somebody to clean up. And I thought of the little girl that I had, a daughter, she's a very beautiful little girl, and I thought it's a terrible shame that it would be for her. And so I didn't shoot myself. And then I had a look at this bottle of methylated spirits, you know. And I didn't even then remember the physical suffering so much of alcoholism, but, you know, I remember the loneliness and the remorse and the indignity and the fear. And I haven't still forgotten them either. And the shame for the things I did when I drank and the guilt. And I didn't want to go back to that. I didn't want to go back to that life where I drank to escape from the life I created with drink. And so it wasn't very hard to push the bottle of methylated spirits away either. And I had, all I had left was the big book, you know. And I opened this big book at random, and it came to a page in chapter 5 where there are three very pertinent ideas. It says, A, that we are alcoholic and cannot manage our own life. And B, that no human power can relieve our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sought, you know. And like Bill W., I decided to experiment. And I prayed, I got on my knees and I said, if there's a God up there, just show me one day of this happiness that I've heard all these people in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about, to prove to me that there is such a thing. And to prove to me even that you, of your existence, you know. And I got one day, that's all I asked for, and that's all I got, you know. And that's the way it works for me. And the next day I asked again, you know. And I asked again the next day, and I got another day. And the next day I got another day, because I asked for it, you know. And this went on for 2 weeks. And I thought, you know, I started to read this book. And I read in the back about the spiritual experiences, you know, that in the back of the big book, in the appendices. And I read about honesty and open-mindedness and willingness, and that if we practice a blatant denial, you know, we get nowhere. And I'd been doing this for years, you know. I had to surrender totally to the first step, and you know, I had a hand over. And that night was the first time I'd ever asked for anything on a daily basis in my life, you know. I could never understand this 24-hour program that people talked about. I just couldn't comprehend it at all, you know. Anyway, after a couple of weeks after this happened, you know, I decided that, I didn't know how to live. And I had to find someone who would teach me. So I tried again. I had a yarn of this fella that had become my newfound friend, you know. I said, just show me somebody who can teach me how to live with a little bit of dignity and self-respect, you know. And I went to bed, and the next morning I woke up and I could remember a man that I'd known in Alcoholics Anonymous in Sydney years before. And he was in my mind. I hadn't seen him for years, and, but I couldn't get him out of my mind, and I thought, that must be the man that I've got to go and talk to. So I snatched my job that day and packed the bags and I off. And the last time I heard of this fellow, he was on the Gold Coast, and I went there, but he wasn't there. But I waited, and he came about 5 months later, and I spoke to him, and he showed me how to live my life still today. You know, he was the right person. You know. Great things have happened to me in this fellowship, you know. I don't have the material things back, and I don't particularly care. I don't have the wife back. I have the daughter back. You know, that's very nice. All she knows about me is my daddy doesn't drink beer. You know. And I haven't had a drink in her lifetime, you know. I found out some things recently about the way I have to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, for the first 5.5 years, I came to a lot of meetings, and I didn't do the steps, and I went backwards. The last 8 months, I've been up in the country in Queensland just about loaning it, and I've been doing all I can about the program, but I haven't been getting to many meetings, you know, and I started to go backwards again. And that's why I came here this weekend. I knew I had to come here. I snatched the job again to get here. And I don't care, you know. I'm willing to go to any lengths to remain sober and to retain what I have got from Alcoholics Anonymous and to make as much progress as I can. I've had a taste of this freedom and I want more of it. And, you know, I've already got most of what I came here for. I listened here in this room yesterday morning to Archie MacKinnon speaking, you know. And he taught me all about gratitude again. And then last night I heard a woman speak over in the other hall there, and she taught me about courage. You know, tomorrow morning I'm going to the spiritual concept meeting, and I know I'll learn about my friend there, you know. But I'm very thankful to Alcoholics Anonymous for the life that it's showing me how to lead, you know. I don't have much anxiety in my life today. I do have troubles, but I can manage them, you know. I live very comfortably. I think it's Steve from Gordon or something says that I live with great abundance, you know, and I do sometimes. You know, I've got a pretty good car and money in my pocket, but they don't really matter to me, you know, but I live real well. And I do what I can about this program. I keep myself available where I can to help people. I'm just so happy to be here tonight, you know. And I still reckon that's much better than the dance. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Jane, do we hear from you?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jane. I'm an alcoholic and a member of the Stanmore group in Sydney. And I feel really nervous. Well, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for it's been 6 months since I had my last drink or drug, and before that I drank and used other drugs for 8 years, and I could never do any of it successfully, you know. My life was unmanageable, and it had been unmanageable before I ever drank, and I never knew any other way to. You know, I'd always felt the way I did and still do sometimes today. You know, I didn't know that there was any different way to feel. And I had a fairly normal upbringing, but I always felt different, always felt like a square peg in a round hole, and I didn't know why, and I didn't know there was anything I could do about it. And then when I drank, it sort of you know, it filled the void and it made me comfortable, and that's what I chased for the rest of the time I was after the effect. And I got it for a long time, you know. I guess in the beginning, I don't know, I guess there must have been some good times, but for the last, you know, 5 years it was really misery and confusion. So I don't remember much that I had a very good time at all. And it just went down, you know. It never really improved for me. I just sort of ran around and moved from place to place. And I could never get my life together. I was always saying, oh, you know, I have to get it together. I have to sort myself out. But I could just never do it, and I couldn't understand why. And, you know, I sort of had a lot of theories about what was wrong with me, but I never did anything about it. And I guess I just had to run my course and get sort of sick enough. And, you know, last year that happened. I tried other ways. I tried to, you know, I tried psychiatry, and that sort of didn't work for me. And I'd really come to my point, I guess, and AA found me. I didn't find AA, and I didn't sort of come to AA because I thought I had a drinking problem or a drugging problem, and I didn't think I was, you know, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I didn't understand anything about this disease at all. I was brought here, and I'm really grateful that I was, because it might have taken quite a few more years, you know, for me to sort of find out. And once I got here, I identified. You know, I wanted to go to Al-Anon first because I figured I was an Al-Anon candidate. And once I sat in an AA meeting, I knew I was, that's where I belonged. And so I continued. And once I stopped drinking, of course, I knew I was an alcoholic, and because that's all I could think about. And so it sort of began. And since then, you know, I guess it's been sort of really, you know, up and down. It's sort of, I have a lot to learn, you know. I sort of, it's only starting to, I guess the fog's only just starting to lift. I didn't realise how confused I was. I really came in very proud and thought I knew it all. And I'm only just finding out now that I don't know anything much at all, and that I have to listen. And that was something I found really difficult to do, was to listen. And I mean, you know, it's wonderful to be here at the convention. I find this difficult sometimes too, such a big thing with lots of people, but at least I can handle it, you know, whereas before I just wouldn't even attempt to handle it. I just sat in my house and just isolated myself for years, and at least now I'm sort of willing to have a go. I fail often, but that's okay. And, you know, at least today I know what I am. I'm an alcoholic, and I know what I have to do if I want to get better and get well and live, you know, a life that I want. And that's certainly a big relief, because I always wanted to know what was wrong with me, and I just, you know, I didn't know where to look for the answers. And now I know. And I don't think I can say anymore. I'm just grateful to be here, and thanks very much.
Ernest.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Ernest, and I'm an alcoholic. This is my first convention, and a little bit overawed by the whole thing. I'm only some 13 months into the program, and so much happened so fast. A little over a year ago, I was just out of Langton Clinic, and I had had a bust, and I'd been coming to AA approximately 6 months prior to that. And I walked through the door of the group that I belong to on the Saturday morning to a beginners meeting, and my ex-sponsor, who was waiting for me to reappear, apparently he knew I would, he looked at me and said, have you taken the first step yet? And I was just talking to this to Trevor before the meeting, and it appears that he knew a lot more about me than I knew about myself. And I was rather affronted by this. Gee, at least he could have done was to pat me on the back and say, what a good boy you are to get back. But getting back was the important thing. And from that time forward, the realisation came to me that I couldn't sort of sit on the fence with AA. I couldn't have a bit of both worlds. I tried the drinking thing again, and I certainly didn't want that anymore, so I had to make a commitment to AA and to myself if I wished to survive. Because during that brief period of drinking that I did indulge in, thoughts of suicide, which I hadn't had before. And the only reason I didn't was because I was up in the first floor of a building, for some time, and I didn't want to jump because I thought I might hurt myself. Terrific. Coward right to the last. So, you know, when I got in, I realised that then I had to take the program seriously. And with that in mind, I did everything my sponsor suggested I should do, to the best of my ability. And it's been a very rewarding year. Within the space of this year, I've done what I could in the way of basic service to the group I belong to, and I didn't like doing that either. I didn't like it at all. But I knew it had to be done, and already I've been a secretary in a minor way for 6 months. I've led a beginner's meeting for the last 3 months. And my group has people come from Langton Clinic on a Saturday morning. And I was able to see within these last 3 months what I was like a year ago. People were asking the same questions, asking of me the same questions that I'd asked of other people about a year previously. And I was able to see already the small amount of growth that I've been able to achieve with the help of my group, my sponsor, and him up there. And that took a little bit of coming to terms with too. I led a religious life as a child that I didn't want to lead, because my parents were very religious people. And they preached a God of fear, and it wasn't a God of love at all. And I got away from that as soon as I was old enough to get out into the world, and I guess with a large chip on my shoulder, because I didn't understand what a God of love was all about at all. And it took me some little time, and I had to accept the fact that there was a God, and that too was a very hard thing for me to do, after having lived for about 25, 26 years as the God of my own little microcosm, and not a very successful one either, I wouldn't say. Because when I first got to the fellowship, I had $3 that I'd managed to bum off the bloke that 12-stepped me. That was all I had. And not a great deal for 43 years effort in life, I didn't think at the time, because I was still thinking on material terms only. Now I've got so much more, not very much more materially. I do have a job, and I've just recently had a holiday. It's the first holiday that I've earned for 12 months' work in about 8 years, I think, and that's only due to AA. Little things, friends, people I can ring up on the telephone, people who call me. What family I have is AA, and I'm possibly not a very good son of that family, but I'm very proud to be one. Thanks, Trevor.
Just a word of explanation. We did start this meeting early, so if anybody feels that they need to get up and move out or even go off to some other venue, please don't be embarrassed. We quite understand. The meeting's likely to go on for some time. I've no need to finish it off when the time comes. So, you know, it might be necessary for some of you to move out. Pat, could we hear from you, please?
Good evening, friends. My name's Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks. Ah, dear, I'm a bit nervous too. I didn't expect to be called. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to this fellowship and all you people for this wonderful life that I've found in AA today, you know, through this program and you people. But it has given me my life back. And my womanhood, my self-respect and my dignity. I have these things back today. I didn't have these things. I lost them all through my alcoholism. And today I'm living the life that I always wanted to live and didn't think I'd be able to ever live, that there would be nothing left for me, just drinking myself into the either an early grave or the rat house. I had 27 years of drinking. I picked up my first drink at 18. I was brought up in a home from the age of 5 because of my mother's alcoholism. And I grew up very bitter and resentful when I was old enough to know that I was in this home and had a mother out there whom I thought didn't want me. Today I understand her, who she is. Well, she's not here today. She died an alcoholic, but not drunk at the time, about 4 years ago. And I never ever forgave her all that time because of that unhappy childhood I had in those homes. And she was an alcoholic, as I said, and I drank with her right through until she died, before she went to hospital. And I think myself very lucky to have been given this chance in life, this new lifestyle, entirely different lifestyle to what I was used to living. And I do think myself very lucky that I was able to, that I was given this chance and my mother never got it. As I said, I drank for 27 years. I drank the lot. I drank the methylated spirits and the metho and the wine mixed together. When I couldn't get a drink, when I did turn to metho, I thought it was degrading. Anybody who ever drank metho earlier on, that I'd never drink it, and I was to drink it. Well, I suffered that when I picked my first drink up at 18, I can remember I suffered right through until I came into AA. I've been 2 years and 8 months in AA now, and I suffered these blackouts, the change of personality, and loneliness and the emptiness I always felt, and that first drink I had, it filled that emptiness up and it helped me communicate. I was a loner and I could get out and I could mix with the rest of them and do the things what I wanted to do, get out and dance and all the rest of it. But then I was my old self after the drink had wore off. Anyhow, I got married and that marriage never lasted. This fella said to me, any woman that drinks like you did, I didn't let him see the way I drank before I married him, but I really let myself go after I married. That marriage didn't last. It lasted 4 years and a few kiddies. And he left. In that time, there's been a few de facto, that was 23 years ago, and there'd been a few de facto relationships. They were all alcoholics. And as I say, I didn't know how to be a normal wife, how to be a normal loving mother to my children. And I still get this shot back into my face today from the adult family that I have because I'm in AA. And I've had to detach from them in a loving way, the best I could. That was about 6 months ago. I couldn't see why. I heard them telling me in AA all the time. I did pick up a drink after 20 months in AA, and it was through one of the reasons. It was these three children having goes at me and wearing me down, and I got depressed and I picked up a drink. Telling me not to come to AA, I had to come back and get the family together. Anyhow, I won't go into a drunken life. I came into AA at the end of 79. The fellow I was living with, we were drinking all through the Christmas, and I was trying to cook Christmas dinner on New Year's Eve day, and we were drunk, and it was always like that. You know, I was always drunk the week before Christmas, always through drink Christmas, and it'd be after New Year, around about New Year, I could cook that Christmas dinner. That's how it was. I got my first Christmas dinner in 1980, because I was sober that year. And so my kids, I'd have the Christmas fare there in the house already, and the fridge filled up, but it was never ever cooked. So anyhow, an argument, we were arguing down each other's throats all that day. And he came at me while I was doing the vegetables. He didn't want me to cook this Christmas dinner. He was jealous about the other boarder being in the house and that I was cooking a Christmas dinner for him. And if he'd have told me that earlier on, I'd have thrown all the vegetables to the backyard and put the turkey back in the fridge and let it go. But I didn't know what he was carrying on about. So anyhow, I picked up the carving knife and I stabbed him in the lungs during that bit of a fight at the table. And he was taken to hospital and he was 15 minutes off death by the court hearing when the ambulance and the paramedics were called in. He was 15 minutes off death. And he was very fortunate to have been able to get to a couple of meetings while he was a patient at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. And he was able to get to a couple of those meetings. And he came out 3 weeks later to get his clothes to go to a halfway house. And he told me he was in AA and he didn't want a drink because I offered him a drink. And I said, "What's AA about?" And he said, "You wouldn't understand." So, he used to come down and have tea every night. Come down and have tea of a night time and pay me for his tea. And ask could he have half an hour's rest to go to these AA meetings. And he still wouldn't tell me what they were about. So I snuck in while I was asleep and looked through his pockets and I found that Just For Today card. And I saw the God part mentioned on it, and when he woke up and came out to have his tea after when he was leaving, I said, "I know what it's about." I said, "You'll end up holier than thou. You and your God." I always believed in God, but I always called myself a child of the damned. I reckon that he didn't give me a fair go in life, that I was put into a home at the age of 5. Without a mother and father's love, and we were ill-treated in that second home from the age of 10 till I left. And I didn't have much time for God and my mother. So anyhow, I saw that Just For Today card and I saw God and I thought it was a religious turnout and I didn't want any part of it, but I thought it was good for him. He wasn't drinking and I didn't want it, but I certainly needed it, but not knowing it. 3 months went by and I saw him up the street and he was still hadn't had a drink all that time. 6 months went by. In this time he would never ever come back near the house after the first week because we were always wrangling down each other's throats. And he came back 6 months later with a doll's house that he'd made for our baby. And I said to him that night, "I'd like to go to one of your AA meetings." And he said, "Don't have a drink tomorrow night and call up the halfway house and come with myself and the boys." Well, at that time, I was a bit frightened because drink had deserted me. All the glamour had gone out of it and I was a bender drinker. And it wouldn't do nothing for me. And I was left a bit scared and frightened, wondering what had happened because I just drank to knock myself out, woke up back into it and drank on to knock myself out and didn't want to see anything or know anything. And I went to that first meeting at Stanmore on the 18th of June 79 with him. And as Bill said, I felt home and hosed that first night I walked into that meeting. That affinity, that physical affinity, I felt that, you know, and I knew there was something here for me and the search was over. Because I knew that he'd kept sober for 6 months and I thought if he could do it, I can do it. I kept on coming to meetings every night. I loved the meetings because I loved the friendship. And I didn't know much what they were talking about because my mind was very scattered. My 3 older children at the time I came into AA were conferring between themselves to put me in one of the psychiatric centres. So I couldn't see that I was going mad. But I know a lot about it today. I was very scattered. And of course I thought I knew there was something wrong with me. And I thought, to be mad, like one person in Newtown hops up and down the street on one leg. And I thought, that's insanity. And then there's another woman, she walks up and down the street, crosses over and up and down that street all day. Well, I thought, that's insanity. I'm not mad. I'm not doing those sort of things yet. But I was on the brink of going a little bit mad, and my memory was going on me, and I couldn't remember nothing. Even sober, which I wasn't very much, there was never ever times I was sober, it was just on a bender and back off to get a little bit physically well, bit of soup into me and back onto it again. So anyhow, I kept on coming to meetings, so I stopped sober for 20 months and I was to pick up a drink again. And I was very angry about having to drink again, and I didn't know why I drank. So I thought I was working these steps to the best of my ability. So I had to go and have a look at these steps and see and at myself. And I had a look through the steps again, and the first one, I'd admitted I was powerless. I knew I was the alcoholic, but I hadn't accepted that. So today I fully accepted that I am this person, the alcoholic, and I cannot pick up that first drink. Step two, I believe that. Step three was I'd handed my life and my will over, but I didn't understand this part where I was taking my will back. So today I made the full surrender. I've thrown in the towel and the hat and the boots and the gloves, the stockings, the whole lot. Four, I had to go back there in four and look at myself. Well, I picked up, I was on the dope 6 years. My daughter got me onto smoking marijuana so I wouldn't drink. So she ended up giving me a double problem because I had to go back to the drink. I couldn't stop just on the dope. It wasn't strong enough for me. And I wanted the drink, so I was mixing the both of them and she was supplying it. So I had a look and I had picked up a smoke and I was smoking again. She said, this doesn't make you mad and you are serene and you're not stabbing people and half killing all these husbands that you had every time you got drunk, of which did happen. Every one of them's nearly been dead. And I've nearly been dead too and in hospital and nearly lost my life. And there was the smoking and I had this practicing alcoholic living in my house. And I was playing God to him, holding his head up above water, and he helped pull me down, and I drank again after I'd seen that, you know, he was pulling me down. I had to drive around and look for another flat for him and got him away after 18 months when I was a wreck back down to, and then I picked up a drink after I got him out. Then I had a little girl who was a result of my drinking, and she's classed as assessed by the Children's Hospital as an alcoholic syndrome baby. And she's a bit demanding of me and my time, and I couldn't manage with her. The fellow that left, he said, you're doing a marvellous job. And I said, if only you knew, you know, I'm not coping that well. She's getting me down mentally. So I put her in a church home, and I detached from those three older children. I don't go near them now, and I don't have them over at the house, where they only come over to nag at me when they're all full of dope and have goes at me. So I've detached from them, and that was 6 months ago. I've done all this, and I've really, rightly, only got sober since October, since I went through these steps. And had a look at myself, and today I'm very grateful for this fellowship of AA, what it's given me, because I am living one day at a time. I was not living one day at a time. I didn't understand what that meant, and that this was a daily program. I'm following this program to the best of my ability, living by it today, and it's been great results for me. I've got this inner happiness in this. It's my first convention, and it's lovely. You know, I've got this lovely inner happiness within me. And things have been really great, you know, and if I just keep it one day at a time to do his will and not my will, I hand over every morning and I don't ever forget of a night time. I do that 10th step in inventory and I thank my loving God. I found a loving God here in AA today And I'm very grateful to all you people for helping me.
Thank you.